Oh my Christ, it is time for a new episode of Gutting the Sacred Cow. Hey everybody, Kevin Goatee here. This continues to snowball on Mount Beloved's Mountain. Why Django Gold comes on the podcast for his first time to explain to us why 1994's The Crow happens to be rotten. Kevin Israel, Mr. 90s himself, joins me yet again to understand and make heads and tails of Django's argument to why one of the best movie soundtracks of all time stinks and why this film should be like Brandon Lee, dead on arrival. Thanks again for checking out Gutting the Sacred Cow every week. We love you. Thank you so much for also leaving those 5-star ratings, 2 or 3 sentence reviews on your podcast platform of choice. Let's see if Django Gold has the goods because, hey, you know what? Can't rain all the time.
Gather round, here's what I know. It's just that this cow has got to go. I know some people kinda like it, yeah, it's trending right now. Yeah, that doesn't matter, cause we're gutting the sacred cow.
You want your driver? Nah, he's not my type. Hey, that's a joke. I'm kidding. Give me my driver. Kevin Israel? This is such a welcome streak that you're on here, having you back on again.
It's a golf movie, I can tell you that.
Okay.
It's not Caddyshack. Maybe it might be Caddyshack. I'm going to go Caddyshack, though I don't specifically remember that line.
It is Caddyshack.
Oh. was that a Dangerfield line?
Oh, you, of course it's a Rondy line.
All right. That's a Dangerfield joke.
Right. Where the kid goes, you want your driver? He's like, oh, no, he's not my type. Hey, that's a joke. I'm kidding. Yeah. Give me my driver. Place your bets. Kevin Goatee, Kevin Israel, joined by Django Gold. What's up, Django? How you doing, man?
Hey, guys. I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
You look like James Spader and sound like James Spader.
Really? I've actually never heard James Spader talk. Does he have a cool, sexy voice, too?
I would say that's pretty much right down the old middle for me. Right, Kevin? Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very sexy.
Very sexy. Oh, yeah, I do kind of look like him. I have like this weird conceited quality where I think a lot of actors look like me that people disagree with me. So you guys are only fueling the flame. You think I'm a total Spader lookalike.
You're welcome.
thank you.
Kevin Goatee, Kevin Israel, Django Gold. We're joined today by him. He has chosen the film that it is going to upset every Gen Xer known to man.
Yeah,
arguably one of probably the biggest soundtrack of that time and maybe of all time. 1994's The Crow. I will tell you right off the bat, the guys that do our artwork, the STST podcast, are incensed that you've decided to attack this film. A budget. Go ahead.
Mascara streaking down there.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that Sting from the WWF has also a bone of contention to take up with you.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They kicked their Doc Martens off in frustration.
1994, great year for film. $23 million budget, a box office haul of $94 million. Turn that into 2023 money. $47 million budget. $193.5 million. That's more than Indiana Jones 5.
Yeah.
To the surprise of no one. IMDb, 1 through 10 with decimal points. Django, what do you think The Crow scored on the old IMDb?
IMDb, the rankings are user rankings, right?
I believe it's a conglomerate.
So, sorry, you're breaking up. What was that?
I said, I believe it's a conglomerate of both.
Okay. I'm going to say 7.2.
7.2, Kevin Israel.
I feel like this movie was pretty well reviewed. I'm going to go 8.5.
7.5. Django strikes first.
Hey.
Was that the Fonzie impression we've all been dying for tonight?
Fonzie, you go like this. You got the 45 degrees. This is just a regular thumbs up.
Hey. There it is. Yeah. There it is.
And if you turn them inwards, it's like the who loves blowjobs? This guy. Yeah. Hey.
Yeah. It's a wide array of possibilities you can do. Siskel and Ebert, you know.
that was a mixed review, BJ. I should do that next time. One up, one down. Yeah. Rotten Tomatoes, fellas, 1 through 100. Critics, Rotten Tomatoes score. Kevin Israel with the tank top. What do you have?
I'm going to go 79.
Django.
71, which is basically my same guess from the last time.
84.
Critically lauded.
Back to you, Django. What do you have for the audience Rotten Tomatoes score?
80 flat.
80 flat. Kevin Israel.
88.
90.
People love this movie. That's why it qualifies.
It sure did. Next, quotes from this film. It's not a good day to be a bad guy. All right, Kevin Israel, how about you do this one together? Ready? Fire it up! Fire it up! They're all dead. They just don't know it yet.
That's a good one. I like that one.
I do too. I feel like a little worm on a big fucking hook.
That feels like something Bill Paxton would say in Aliens.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good call. Good call.
Game over, man. Game over. I feel like a little worm on a big fucking hook.
Yeah, man.
Well, let's have a moment of introspection for poor old Tintin.
That is a good line. Yeah,
thank you. Here's one more for you. Call bang, fuck them dead. That's another one. Kevin Israel, any quotes?
I'm stunned that we don't have any of the same quotes.
We always do.
Yeah, and we have none. Shit on me.
Yeah.
Just because nobody has ever said that as an exclamation ever.
Yeah. Well, they have, but they usually pay to do that.
It's a request or a demand. It's not a
there's usually a glass table involved too, but okay.
Or saran wrap. Very specific. One of my crew got himself perished. Mother's, I actually like this quote. Mother's the name of God on the lips of and hearts of all children.
That is from, I forgot, a poem or a book.
Yeah. T-Bird won't be joining us on account of a slight case of death.
Love that one. Love that one.
And the theme of the show, of the movie, can't rain all the time.
I knew I left that for you. I knew you were going to draw. You're not leaving me behind on that one. Django, any quotes stand out at you, or do we just milk this cow dry?
No, it's pretty good. Pretty well milked. Although I liked how this movie had like a lot of like the stereotype of cops in the 90s. This is like donuts, you know, that was like the only bad thing people would say about cops back then. And one of the lines from, I think it's from the cop himself. So many cops, you'd think they'd given away donuts.
Yeah. I almost wrote that one down.
I did in my notes section, but I'll talk about that then.
Yeah. Ernie Hudson. I can't believe I blanked on that name. He was great in this.
Excuse me. That's Winston Zeddemore for Kevin.
Winston Zeddemore. Seriously. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, never mind. Yeah. Never mind.
Five fun facts. One producer wanted to make the film a musical. Do you want to guess who they wanted to have as the role of the crow? An absolute megastar. Who was, megastar.
Tom Cruise.
You're both sitting down, so I don't have to ask you to sit down. No, the answer is Michael Jackson.
That's kind of a crazy fun idea. I wish that.
You know what he did? He did that. Moon
Captain EO.
What was the Moon, the movie that was like a long music video?
Yes. It also was a video game, which was terrible.
Yeah.
Oh my God, too. Someone Google that while I'm doing this. Yeah, I know it. Joe Pesci was the bad guy.
Yes. Yeah. It actually wasn't bad.
No. But it was fucking terrible. I rewatched. Was it? Oh, it is butthole.
Really?
It is butthole puckering awful. Especially with the allegory. Yeah. And them kidnapping kids and him rescuing them. Oh, it really rings true.
That hurts. Yeah. O'Barr, the producer, recalls that this unnamed producer suggested The Crow should be a musical with pop superstar Michael Jackson as the lead role. Can't read all the time. O'Barr says he immediately laughed out loud, assuming it was a joke, but the producer was entirely serious.
Video notes. Beware.
It was, by the way, the name is just ridiculous. It was Moonwalker.
I thought it was Moonwalker, but I was like, I was going to say that, but yeah. This one got me. Guess what? There are never at any point in this film any actual crows in this movie. They're all ravens.
Yeah.
Because they are renowned for their sinister appearance, but they're actually quite small, plus very difficult to train. At the advice of the animal handlers, the filmmakers used ravens instead, which are easier to train as well as more physically imposing. My favorite section. Sorry, Kevin, go ahead.
Sorry, I think at one point, he even says a quote from Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven.
Yeah. Oh, he does. There's a rapping my chamber door.
Yeah. And I was like, that's not a crow. But anyhow.
Now it's time for my favorite segment. Who did they ask to do this film first? One of the first ones. Let's see here. Okay. All these guys were huge in the 90s. One of them huge in the 2000s. Still kind of sort of big. One of them very big and not so much anymore. Do any of you guys want to take a guess on the first three that they approached to play Eric Draven?
Johnny Depp.
One.
That was my only guess. That's the only person I thought of.
Yeah. I feel like I'm cheating because I read it earlier, so I know the answer.
Since you know the answer, I'll just give it right now. The answer is River Phoenix. No one would have ever gotten that one.
Yeah.
And Christian Slater.
Wow, they were going for all that typecast.
Did he turn down The Crow to do Cuffs? That movie Cuffs, yeah. No. Hey. It's not a good day to be a bad guy. He's very Nicholson.
Yeah, I was going to say that was bordering on Nicholson.
Where did he go? I've not seen Christian Slater in like 30 years. Does he still act?
I don't know, but my high school guidance counselor is best friends with his mother, and her daughter, who is a mess, trying to throw it in everybody's face. He's from Jersey guy, actually. So
Didn't he do iRobot? Wasn't that him? Mr. Robot. Yeah.
That's probably the latest, most notable thing. I'm looking at his Wikipedia right now. I do not recognize any of these films.
I tried watching that for a season. I go, I just don't give a shit.
Yeah. Yeah. It suffers from some of this.
I watched this first season, and once you knew that Christian Slater wasn't real or whatever the twist was, it was like, well, what's the point of the rest? It's over. That would have been like if Sixth Sense just kept going for three more hours once you knew he was dead.
Yeah, they killed the golden goose a little bit.
The gal who they offered, go ahead. I'm going to cut you off, Django.
I was just going to say that Mr. Robot suffers from the same problem I think The Crow suffers from, which is any movie they're trying to make nerds seem cool quite lands. Like when they're trying to make goths or nerds or dorks or dweebs or lamos the hero. I'm always like, yeah, but
you hear that, Seth Rogen? You know, are you listening?
That felt like a line from Grease. Hey, you dork, dweeb, and lamos.
Listen here, fellas.
What model turned the role down of Shelley when she was 21? She declined because she did not like the script. I'll give you a hint. She was not big at all at the time. Until actually, I take that back. Later that year in 94, she exploded on the scene. Pretty big in the 90s, obviously, and 2000s. Not so big now, but was a nobody when they offered to do this role.
Carmen Electra,
no. She was doing Singled Out then, you silly goose.
Oh, yeah. She was huge with Singled Out.
Yeah. That was... She was also huge in my pants. Yeah. Meow. You got a guess for me, Django?
I said Kate Moss, which I really doubt is right.
No, Kate Moss was late 80s, early 90s. The answer, Cameron Diaz.
Oh, she was a model? I had no idea.
She was, yeah. She started out as a model, yeah.
Oh, very good.
Number four, this one, to surprise of no one, the film's firearm supervisor had gone home early when Brandon Lee's tragic accident occurred. Good thing that Alec Baldwin wasn't on set, otherwise he would have eaten a bullet sooner.
Just like, I'm going to clock off for the day. You guys clearly have this under control, right?
Yeah, you guys are good, right?
Yeah, guys, just fire that gun a few times. Yeah.
This is the knife scene where he fights Tintin in the alley. That's it, right? That's all? Okay, good. I'm out of here. There were only 3 days of principal photography left on The Crow when this infamous tragedy occurred. At this point, fun boy actor Michael Massey pointed the prop gun at Lee and fired. The plan was that a squib in the grocery bag would explode and Lee would drop to the ground. At first, everyone thought they had the shot, no problem. But then after the director called cut, Lee didn't get back up. The prop gun fired at Lee had not been properly checked for debris beforehand.
Man, so that the actual actor in the movie killed right. Brandon Lee. Jesus right. Christ.
This is almost like a Yosemite Sam Bugs Bunny put their finger in the gun and it blows up on Yosemite Sam.
Yeah, not quite as funny.
No. The Crow City of Angels, you guys see that? I did. It was goddamn terrible.
Yeah.
You
know?
Don't forget that 4 years after that came out, The Crow Salvation, which came out co-starring Kirsten Dunst, was released directly to video and met with surprise negative reviews. Finally, in 2005, The Crow Wicked Prayer came out starring none other than John Connor himself, Edward Furlong.
Hell yeah.
And plastic surgery, plaintiff for the stars, Tara Reid. Oof. This Man. Went straight to home video. And by the way, surprise to no one yet again, a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I'm calling this right now. They're going to try to do a reboot of Crow.
They already tried.
I guarantee they're going to try to do it again, and it's going to be with a woman.
Oh, this is going to be a terrible idea.
That's unacceptable.
It's definitely coming. It's going to happen.
They already know it's going to happen if they do that. Female Ghostbusters ate it. Ocean's 8 ate it.
We can do it right. We're going to do it right.
The Crow should be a man with female features, not a woman.
Timothy Chalamet is the Crow.
That's not a bad idea.
Actually, that's not terrible.
Thank you.
And I hate him.
I do too. They were kicking the idea around of, do you guys know who this one was? It was Jason Momoa and Bradley Cooper.
Wait, I can see Momoa.
He's too big. He's too brawny for that. Not doing that one.
Murder of crows. Well done.
How about Counting Crows? But Dervitz, Adam Dervitz. He'd be a great one, right? Just for the name.
That'd be fun. Yeah.
That's pretty meta, right, guys? Come on, I'm working here.
Yeah.
Let's get on over to where the fans jumping on the fun. The Herd has questions for you, Django. Gutter. At STST Podcast, blasphemy. I have an urge to crash this taping. More of a statement, but nonetheless noted. Delvin Cox, Brandon Lee died for our enjoyment. How dare you?
Well, that was in response to what you guys tweeted. Apparently it was.
At STST Podcast again, where does Michael Wincott's performance rate versus his other performances?
What has he been in?
I've only remembered him one film.
Only one thing.
Metro. That's it? Anything else? I remember him in that. Someone pull that up here. We probably should have looked that up in advance, but we didn't.
Yeah, he's had a decent filmography. I just don't know what anything.
Yeah, he was in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Oh, of course. He was
Guy Gisbane.
Gisborne.
Yeah, Guy of Gisborne. Yeah.
So funny
with
he was in
spoon.
That. Yeah, oh, that's it. Everyone knows Alan Rickman, for Christ's sake. Yeah. This poor bastard goes by the wayside. Next question. Oh, so yeah. So that where rank him versus other performances. Is Robin Hood Prince of Thieves better than this?
Based on my ignorance of his work, this is his best movie ever. I don't remember seeing Robin Hood Prince of Thieves. I remember seeing Robin Hood Men in Tights like 1,000 times and never once saw the actual source material, which I guess is kind of shows you the holes in my knowledge where I'm just watching the goofs and ignoring the real deal.
Well, I'll break it for you. It's the exact same character.
Okay. He's like a nasty kind of sexy,
yeah, just sexy, I mean, demon. He looks that way and he can't be anyone else.
Yeah.
He's the Stifler of gravelly voiced bad guys. Yeah,
exactly.
Oh yeah. I don't know. His character in this was not really that intimidating to me. I wasn't really buying it, but
also, how dare you? How dare you? Finishing up from the STST podcast at Joe Loves Chem. Since you've worked at for the Onion, can you tell me why so many Onion articles about Area Man describes me a semi bro to a T?
What can we say? Sometimes art imitates life, you know. Also, you know, you signed a waiver that allowed us to monitor you through your laptop camera. So
I told you, Big Brother is watching. That's next right. One at Lord Snurts, who always nails it with A questions and B scores, and I'm going to withhold the scores until we're all done giving them, not to influence in any way, shape, or form. Let's take the concept of the Crow and apply it to a real life musician. Who's coming back from the grave? Who's their target for revenge? Excellent question.
All the guys from Creedence, right? some kind of swamp rock revenge story against the air traffic controller.
Excellent. How about John Denver? Can he come back for revenge against that Rocky Mountain?
I like a soft, smooth songster like wreaking havoc around. It could be like El Mariachi with the guitar, except he's like swinging.
I'm going to suggest Michael Jackson coming back for Kevin Goatee for that last joke he made about.
Oh yeah,
more to come, kids. Don't go anywhere. I want Kurt Cobain to say, "God damn you, Courtney Love! You took all my money and my daughter, and I'm going to put a shotgun in your mouth this time."
And then you started a shitty band.
I thought people liked Hole. I thought that first album was good.
It was actually. I've been listening to a lot of Lithium Deep Cuts. Man, they do have some good songs. They're not bad. And yeah, she did a cover for, ironically, Gold Dust Woman on The Crow, City of Angels, and it's not terrible.
Oh really? The Fleetwood Mac song?
Yeah. The Crow soundtrack, cool. The second soundtrack, also, I don't know, you can mock me if you want to, which I'm sure you will. The Bush does a great song on that album. It's solid. Some Bush songs are okay. They're okay.
I don't hate Bush.
I'm not paying to see them, but man, that again, The Crow 2 soundtrack does. Oh, Filter also does a great song on there too. Give that a listen.
The 90s was just such a good time for music.
Wasn't it?
Filter, I don't, the word great song, I feel like I very rarely put in the same sentence.
A great song for them. I like Filter. I saw them at Birchill, Kevin Israel.
Oh, shit. I love Birchill.
Who didn't? That's going to close Ask a Gutter, a light week, as opposed to last week with, of course, the avalanche known as Shawshank Redemption.
That must have been crazy.
Oh, you guys did Shawshank? Oof, man.
Well, we didn't do it. A guest did it. We only supplied the platform for the guest to voice their grievances.
Sure.
And that was easily a 25-minute ordeal of asking all the questions about why this person did Shawshank.
People were just furious. Yeah, I feel like the Crows have a lot of defenders. A lot of people in the fishnet stocking gangs.
Well, listen, we didn't have that big of a fishnet stocking crowd attacking people for Rocky Horror Picture Show. So that's a sound hypothesis in my book.
Yeah.
Let's get right. Listen, hey, remember, no one listens to the end of podcasts, so we do our plugs at the beginning.
Ooh.
Django Gold, what are you up to? What are you working on?
I am currently putting the finishing touches on my debut stand-up special, which should be coming out in a few weeks. Let's say September, early September. So listeners, if you find me hilarious or want to see more of me, I would say subscribe to my YouTube channel, Django Industries. Same on Instagram, same on TikTok. Subscribe. The special is going to be great. The crew did a fucking phenomenal job. It's crazy how good it looks. And I think it's going to be a banger. So pay attention for that.
Nice. Good luck with it.
Thank you.
Good luck indeed. Kevin Israel.
KevinIsrael.com for comedy dates. I got a few more summer dates, and then my hiatus begins for me trying to figure out how to take care of two children. And then I'll be back in the winter and the spring. And I'm actually looking to tape another album probably next summer.
Nice.
Don't forget, leave us that 5-star rating, 2 or 3 sentence review, wherever you get your finest of podcasts. And wherever you see our content on all the socials, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, hit that subscribe button if you haven't already on YouTube, but also give us that like, really helps. Really appreciate that. guttingthesacredcow@gmail.com if you want to advertise with us. Kevin Israel, let's see if Django is going to make this crow go caw, caw, bang, fucking dead.
Caw, caw, or caw, caw, caw. Yeah. Crows don't have very much of a vocabulary. It's hard to really tease out the metaphor there.
And let's right. have him come out and
gut
the sacred cow. Your Honor, Your Honor, take it away.
I think I have a lot of issues with this movie. First off, this might be the first movie I've ever seen that seems to be almost entirely flashbacks. And I think we all can identify flashbacks as being like something you want in extreme moderation. This movie is all oddly shot, oddly lit flashbacks of the Crow's pre-death life. And it's just like, it's very like melodramatic and kind of lame. You're constantly seeing him like touch a trash can. The trash can reminds him, oh, me and my dead girlfriend used to have a trash can in our apartment. And then it takes you to this kind of Nine Inch Nails video style montage of them like laughing in bed, throwing garbage in their trash can or whatever. And then he comes out of it and he walks down the street and he sees a ladder. And that reminds him of the ladder they had in their apartment. So it's just like constantly. So the stutter stepping through the plot, we're just constantly going back. Like, there are so many better filmmaking techniques and storytelling techniques that don't involve having to do this every 5 seconds. So that was the first thing that kind of jumped out at me. Like, damn, there are way too many flashbacks in this, and they're way too gaudy and weirdly lit and just kind of melodramatic. So that's my first gripe.
Hmm. A lot of films do use flashbacks. JFK used a bunch of them. Batman films, big fan of the flashbacks.
Oh yeah,
big fan. A lot of superheroes. Any origin story is flashbacking. So the Flash, full of them.
Oh yeah,
the whole damn
Flash
film.
Flashbacks.
Get it? Okay, all right, fair enough. Not a fan of flashback.
My gripe number two. This is something I alluded to earlier. I was not convinced that cool or admirable. I was never a goth guy. I never really got the whole goth thing. So I never, this kind of seemed more like a marketing push to get your Joy Division type guys into like superheroes. So it never really convinced me, because you see like these like fishnet stocking weirdos, and I just don't really see them feasible as like tough badasses. So you have this like very like kind of like elegant, like snake like hero doling out justice. It just didn't really resonate with me. I want like a standard cookie cutter action hero. I certainly do not want a guy listens to Nine Inch Nails. That was not selling it for me.
Something tells me that you weren't a fan of the Warriors by that rationale either.
I know nothing about Django, but Warriors. I know if a prostitute in fishnet stockings approached him, he'd spit on her.
That's right. Anti-sex worker. Use that in the promotion clip. Make sure everyone knows I am anti-sex work. Yes.
Only if they're wearing fishnets.
It's more about fashion than the prostitution element. Yeah. I also was not a big fan of the general like kind of gloomy goth lighting. That just felt kind of cheesy. I was surprised you said this movie had like a $25 million budget, because a lot of it looks like very cheap. But like, so I was kind of surprised to see that it cost that much money, because a lot of it just kind of feels like kind of like two dimensional. Like that scene where he's fighting the knife guy in the alley just like felt like very like, I don't know, insubstantial. Like it seemed like it was like kind of like fake brick wall, whatever. And I'm sure it was not, but like it just looked kind of cheesy and not like that cool to me.
So not a fan of the set design then. All right.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like, I guess I've never been like a big comic book movie guy, which is a larger issue we could talk about if you want. But like, because of that, like I want things that feel like more real and like realistic. And having like the lightning strikes all just kind of felt a little silly to me. Maybe with modern eyes.
Okay. Effects too. It sounds like you're out against.
Yeah, I'm against that. What else? Any movie with like a cute little kid.
And damn those kids.
I know I'm coming off as like the world's ultimate curmudgeon in this, but like no children, no fun, no props, no scenes. But like, yeah, like having a cute little like know-it-all kid, like that always kind of irks me in a weird way. Like you guys saw True Grit, right?
The reboot.
That's like it's like a kid that's always like outsmarting the grownups. That just always kind of like feels a little silly. It all like reeks of a. Not reeks of it. It just kind of reminds me of like Problem Child. So whenever I see a movie with that, it's like I immediately don't take it seriously because it has all this like the character like that just doesn't really do it for me.
Well, if you're taking Problem Child seriously, we have a whole new bag of issues to discuss.
Can that be the sacred cow we take down? Problem Child, critically acclaimed trilogy.
I'll also assume that you're just loathsome to discuss Home Alone 1, 2, and maybe even 3.
I kind of look like a kid from Home Alone.
A little bit. You look like him after Mila Kunis left him to go marry Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah, I look like bottom of the barrel, fucking stealing bus tokens, Macaulay Culkin.
Wait a minute, you're telling me that didn't work? But Kindergarten Cop, where he says boys have a penis, girls have a vagina, that didn't bring a little humor to your very black heart?
Well, that's a comedy. I guess it's different. I don't like it. We're supposed to take it as like serious, you know.
I'm making light. I agree. There's nothing. I hate when people say how much they love Remember the Titans because his daughter, the one of the coach's daughters, is like,
oh, she sucked.
You need to cover the back blitz. You need to cut. You slide protection over to cover the blitz.
Hate it. So overrated. Hate that shit. Sugar-fied
Disney nonsense. But yeah, that one is like the pinnacle of annoying shitbox kids. Where it's like, you think a coach ring his kid is going to let him call out protection plays? Like the middle linebacker is getting blocked by the tight end. You need to go around and create that screen, that bump.
Yeah. That shit sucks, man.
You need to chip that without running back.
It's using kids say the darndest things as like a fuel to move the plot forward. No, thank you. Wasn't really into the villain. In the same way that I found the Crow / Eric Draven like oddly like lilting and like kind of like weird like sinewy snake guy. I also thought the villain was kind of like we're supposed to be intimidated by like this, you know, sex pest guy. Mm-hmm. Like it's just weirdly exotic. It's kind of like bizarre. It wasn't really doing it for me. I wasn't really that intimidated by him. Although, as was pointed out earlier, he did have some pretty good lines.
He did.
Yeah, he was a good villain in terms of having like snappy rejoinders and lines and all that. But I wasn't really into him or his like sister / like hench like right hand woman.
Yeah, what was she?
I think they tried to imply that they were like related, right?
They said at some point they said my sister, and he was like, "You don't think we look alike?" And it was, and like, and then that was it. It was never like that joke was never brought up again.
Do you think that was
at the very end? At the very end,
I feel like in the context of the movie, that was he was supposed to be like joking, sort of, when he said, "Well, you don't think we look alike?" Mm-hmm. But then it was never explained, like, "Oh, she was adopted," or. Half, or maybe we're supposed to buy that this guy is Asian. I don't know.
That might have been one of those things that got lost in the plot because they had to do all these rewrites after the protagonist got killed by a prop gun. So maybe we lost a little bit of continuity there. I was not a big fan of the like. This is like a trope you see of this era. Where it's like cool 90s bands performing as part of like the scene dressing.
Yeah.
You know, and we're, and like you see the people in the crowd be like, the iconic one, I guess, is what is it, Lost Boys, the vampire movie? What's his face on the beach? Like that, whenever you see that trope, which is very funny, it's always enjoyable to watch. But whatever happens at the moment, it's like, this is not cool. You're not be backing your head to like whatever one hit wonder you like. You're paying scale to perform in this like sexy goth nightclub.
Song in the goth nightclub is a fucking banger, and you could not be more wrong.
Which because there's two of them. Which one?
My Life with the Thrill Kill Cult.
Oh yeah. That's a very. God, what are they up to?
Nothing, but that song at the time, and it still is. And I listened to the soundtrack just the other day. It's still great. If you don't love industrial music, then you missed out. Have grunge.
I like Nine Inch Nails. I used to like KFMDM.
Love KFMDM. I was listening to them yesterday. It's so funny. You said KFMDM. I was listening to them yesterday. Sister Machine Gun. I'm not a Cure fan at all. Remember that one, Kevin Israel? Boy, they're badass. That whole Wax Track era. God damn, I miss it. Gravity Kills. Saw them at Burchill too. What was I just saying before? Oh, the Cure. I hate the Cure's other regular stuff. But Burn, the song they do in this film, is a banger. My wife went to the concert a few weeks ago, took video of the live version. He kills it live. I even downloaded it from YouTube. The soundtrack is inarguably one of the top 3 to 5 of all time. There's no question.
That's a statement. And it's really brave of you to go to bat for this era of music.
I'll go to bat. I will go to bat for this era of music. And without question, and I have legions of supporters supporting
that. I'm sure you do. Oh shit, Helmet was on the soundtrack. I like Helmet.
Yeah, they were. Stone Temple Pilots, right before their second album release, that song was in the film before their new album came out. Big Empty.
Yeah.
Israel, you're very quiet for the soundtrack. I know you're a fan of that.
I am. I've never been a huge industrial fan, like across the genre, and. It's just this was an era where I would just get soundtracks. Like I remember, I just like,
yes,
all of my cassettes were just soundtracks. And then I would never look into like the bands that sang them. Like I'd just be like, oh, and then a song would come on and be like, oh, that's from the Pulp Fiction soundtrack. And they'd be like, yeah, this is whoever. And I'd be like, OK, like I just listened to the Pulp Fiction soundtrack 20 times. I don't know the band.
Yeah.
I could go Hackers. There are three variations of that soundtrack. Johnny Mnemonic was the worst film ever made.
Johnny Mnemonic had a great soundtrack.
Banging soundtrack. God, there's Underwater, Moby. I mean,
Judgment Night.
Yes. Go. The movie Go. Yeah.
Oh, wow,
We can go down this movie soundtrack rabbit hole all day, but we want to hear Django go after this.
Your podcast after this one. Seriously.
Gutting the Sacred Soundtrack.
Ooh.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like more like you guys would be, praising it, but I think the henchmen are kind of like weird and like cartoonish, which I know is kind of the point, but I don't know. If I'm seeing an action movie, I don't want like a bunch of goofing goofballs goofing around, I want a little more oomph. It's just,
Stank.
Yeah. Stank / Skank. That was one of the guy's names, right?
Yeah, Skank. That's right. Yep.
I guess I'm realizing that the more I complain about this, a lot of my problems are like kind of more with like the cartoonish aspect of these types of movies rather than with The Crow specifically. I mean, The Crow might be doing as good of a job as they can with the tropes that they're given. But yeah, I guess like kind of like the bumbling guys, like, shut up, go and get us a six pack. Oh, whatever you say, boss. Like that type of thing is kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of silly.
Did you not watch He-Man as a kid where Skeletor bossed everybody around?
No, I didn't. Is he a boss from hell?
I mean, he is pretty much. That's pretty way to butcher the put it.
Merman, go kill him.
Yeah. Beastman was a perfect bumbling idiot.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And more or less, I mean, that's pretty much it. Can I say some of the things I do like about it?
Okay.
Or is that verbal?
Is this now kissing the sacred cow?
Yeah. Reviving the sacred cow.
French tonguing the sacred cow. No, it doesn't. You can say what you like.
Well, I just love Ernie Hudson and John Polito. I just think they're great actors. Anything they're in is just always elevated. Like Ernie Hudson is just like the consummate, like, like friendly cop in this movie. And John Polito is like just hilarious. He's always just like a cranky bum in whoever he plays. This fucking Barton Fink. What's the Coen Brothers with the Irish guy?
Oh,
Miller's Crossing. Sorry.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. He's just great.
So that's what you like then. Okay. It's going to get a little bit weird if you give a laundry list of shit you like about it. Yeah. You came here to take a dump on it.
Well, I feel like I've stayed my case for the record. And as we determined, my main two issues are with the goth lifestyle, which is sinful. And I think anyone doing it should be
sinful,
cast out into the desert. And
do you have a stroke every time you walk past a Hot Topic in the mall?
Is Hot Topic still around?
Sure is. There's one in Willowbrook Mall. I know that. And I also walked by one right by me, the huge mall. I'm blanking, Kevin Israel. The one, the Meadowlands Giant Stadium. What's the name of that place?
Oh, Jersey Gardens. No, not Jersey Gardens. I keep wanting to call it Xanadu, but that's
I do too. Beforehand. I was going to say Xanadu. This is a Jersey conversation, yeah. Folks. So if you don't know what we're talking about, it's the big mall next to Giant Stadium. Our MetLife, as you people get mad when we say it's not.
He, whatever stands, that He stands outside Hot Topics and hands out Bibles.
Yeah.
Repent.
There's also the only lone standalone Toys R Us in there too. Did I tell you?
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
And it's insanely overpriced. Don't go.
Of course.
I thought Toys R Us was out of business.
It was, and now it's back in because
they reorganized.
Yeah.
Back.
By the way, they don't sell video games to the point where I complained the first time I took my daughter there. I went back there for her birthday. And they changed the song. It's no longer No Bikes in Trains to Video Games. None of that. They don't sell video games in there anymore. That's
heretical not to do that.
It's problematic.
It's also a very funny visual of you complaining to the manager of the Toys R Us.
Yeah, to the millennial.
For Tony Hawk skater.
I have all the Tony Hawk skaters. Thank you very much. Another bunch of great soundtracks. Django, give me a number 1 to 10 on your thoughts of The Crow.
I think... First, holistically, I would say The Crow is a great movie to have on in the background between 1994 and 1998. It's a fine movie that's playing on USA at 9 p.m. and then an encore presentation at 11 to not really be paying attention to while you do something else. One to 10, I'm giving this guy a 5.5.
5.5.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Kevin Israel, put on that black eyeliner and let's dance with the devil in the pale moonlight. I just mixed two genres.
You guys are biased because you love this era of music so much. I feel like that's something you should be.
Don't jump the gun.
Yeah.
Do not jump the gun, sir.
All right.
We've trashed Batman Returns. Well, Batman Returns doesn't hold up on its own, but there are plenty of other films of this era that we've just jumped down the throat of and had our way with.
We're more than willing to admit when something doesn't hold up.
Right.
When KG asked me to come on to do this, I was excited because I hadn't seen it in a while and I remembered loving The Crow, but I also remembered my experience with Boondock Saints and I remember loving Boondock Saints. And then we did Boondock Saints and I was like, Jesus Christ. But this movie,
terrible
as I think Kevin has echoed many times. Like, I love the 90s. Like, I love, there's almost nothing that came out of the 90s that I don't love. Even if I didn't like it, I still love it. Like, it's still, like, all things 90s, warm 90s fashion, even the goth 90s fashion. That wasn't me. But, like, I don't know, something about it just makes me, like, always feel like, that was my time. Like, that 10 years was, like, my time.
Sure.
And so getting to do this movie, I was excited. And I also remember this movie, you know, 94, so many great things happened in 94. You know, Kevin and I graduated high school. You know, this movie came out. I lost my virginity. Like, it was a great 94 was a great year.
You know, that's 2004 for you. The virginity.
It was 2014, actually. I'm just overall excited about watching this movie. So I watched it last night. And my first observation was it was like somebody watched Batman and then watched RoboCop and was like, I got an idea. This movie mirrors those two movies in so many like weird ways, but they pulled like sort of the weakest stuff from them and made the movie like the bad guys. First of all, we all know a great action movie, especially we'll call this a superhero movie, even though that didn't exist at the time. But that's basically what it is, especially a superhero movie is only as good as its villain. The best of the superhero movies had great villains. That's why anything with Thanos was so good. Thanos was a great villain. He had a cause that was almost like kind of you could all kind of get behind it. And he, you know, he was a sympathetic villain. These guys were just like, we're bad guys. And how do you know we're bad guys? Because we rape people and we swallow bullets with liquor. And
how did I forget to fucking mention that scene? That sucks.
But at least, Kevin, you said that they showed and didn't tell you.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
Yes.
But it was all so performative. It
How
was
many
just like
bullets. Do you have to eat before? Okay, he's
in.
Guy.
He's in. He's in.
I didn't believe when he raped and murdered that couple, but he is eating bullets. Okay, fine. Okay, fine.
And I think one of them had a bullet in his ear, actually, which I thought was oddly prescient considering what happens in this movie. Yeah, so the bad guys all in this were like just bad guys. And this was in a time when movies were made where it was like being a bad guy, I guess, was a career. Like the main bad Top Dollar, which is the wildest, such a 90s name for a villain. Like, what was his occupation? Like, what did he do to make money? Like,
he's a nightclub owner.
Right? Yeah, but like. He was just
He
was just a villain. Like, yeah. And I'm not saying like we have to see every villain's like taxes, but it was just felt like these are just bad guys. Like, he sits at a big table in a throne. He yells at people. He, you know, he makes things. He's got this like weird lady who looked like a wizard. Like, she was probably some kind of spiritual. Like, she figured out at the end without any reason why she figured out that, like, if you kill the crow, he'll lose his power. They didn't even show her like going through a book to figure that out. Like, there was no and so I'm going through my notes horribly because it's just the order I have them written down. But so that goes back to my first thought about the movie. They introduce Eric, and now I know, knowing what happened in the movie production and that a lot of it affected the beginning of the movie, I understand. So I'm sure people on Twitter are going to be like, well, they had to do it that way because he was fucking dead. They introduce him and there's just no like backstory or like any reason to care about him. All you see is the headshot and so he's in a band, and then you see his girlfriend, fiance, whatever she was, getting raped and murdered, and then he gets thrown out to Django's point in all those flashbacks. And okay, so now we're good. That's all you need to know about him. Somebody got killed and now he's going to get her. This movie also in that reminds me incredibly of a movie that maybe Kevin saw. I don't know if Django would have seen it. The Wraith. It was a 90 it was an 80s action-ish movie about a guy who he and his girlfriend get killed together by another gang of just their bad guys. And he comes back as this supernatural guy who can become a car, and he becomes a badass sports car. And the whole movie is him as this guy driving the sports. It's not really clear if he drives the sports car, if he is the sports car, and he goes and he kills all of the bad guys that killed him. And that's, and it's literally almost point for point, the same movie. It's like the same exact thing. And honestly, I think The Wraith does it a little better because it's got the car in it, which is cool. So if you like, I'm a huge car guy. So if you like cars, it's a really, really cool car movie. And this I remembered being a fighting movie because it's Brandon Lee. Like, oh yeah, Brandon Lee has got to be able to fight, right? Like, and I remember him doing like cool fighting stuff. And there's no good fights in this. There's not one good fight where I was like, oh, that was cool, or that was like fun to watch. And then like, he uses guns sometimes, but other times he uses his hands. Like, if he was like, no, I don't use guns, I just, you know, I just kill people with my hands. But it was just weird. Like, there was nothing other than the makeup, which was cool. And obviously it was cool enough for Sting to completely rebrand his entire wrestling persona around this. The makeup was cool. Everything else about him is just kind of like, he can't get killed, so there's really no stakes. And he dresses in all black and he goes and he's killing these six or seven bad guys. It's just such a like sort of empty plot. Like, I didn't expect character development from this movie. You shouldn't. But as far as the plot goes, there was just nothing to go, oh, like, that's interesting. Like, the bad guys are all just bad guys. He's just a guy out for revenge. And we've seen revenge movies dozens of times, and they've been done so much better. There was that one movie with Bruce Willis where it's set in the like the 30s, and he rolls into a town and gets caught up in this like this gang war between these two like moonshine gangs, and he kills all of them because they did something to him. I can't remember what. And there's nothing behind that movie besides that. Like, he's just a badass who ends up in this town and gets caught up and he kills everyone. And it's so much, that movie is so, and it's so interesting. I can't remember the name, but that movie to me is so much more interesting than this movie. Like, this movie, it doesn't pass in any way the remote test, as we've talked about it. Like, I there was nothing in this where I was like, ooh, I got to stop and watch that again. Or, ooh, that's something I'd want to see again.
Yeah.
First of all, the cast was wild, like just a wild group of like, oh my God, that guy. Like, it had Sully from Commando.
Ah, I was going to see if you're going to drop that gem, because I had it first up in my notes.
Winston Zeddemore.
Yeah.
Guy Gisborne. Candyman. And the secretary from Bad Boys.
Ah, the other one you stole. Damn it.
Like all these like second or third or even fourth tier characters and actors and whatever. And it's just like, so I was like, I was like IMDb-ing furiously as I was watching this movie. I was like, oh, yeah. I think that's her. That's definitely her. It was an hour and 35 minutes or something like that, or an hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And it did feel like it dragged a little bit. Like, halfway through the movie, I was like, okay, what more does he have to do? Like, he's almost killed the whole gang already. And it does kind of drag. So, like, was the script good? No. Was the acting good? The acting is not good in this at all. Brandon Lee, I'm sure, would have maybe come into himself. He was not a good actor. And it felt like he kept on changing who Eric Draven was supposed to be.
He's just constantly like going like this. Like, that's his acting. You know, there's no.
Yeah, but even, I mean, he had like 15 lines in this movie. If,
yeah.
And each one he delivers kind of is a different persona. And at one point the thing about this movie, I know I've kind of shit on it this whole time. The thing about this movie is I think it really set the stage for a lot of other movies. Like, I think a lot of other movies drew from it. I am a huge Todd McFarlane, who's a comic book artist. And writer, Spawn fan. The Spawn movie was terrible. The comic book was great. And I really...
soundtrack, by the way.
Yeah, and a great... You're right, and a great soundtrack. I did Google it, but I'm pretty sure he had to... McFarlane, when he created Spawn, had to be influenced by this movie because it's got so much of the same imagery, and it's such a similar story about a guy being killed and coming back from the dead to, like, avenge his family. So the scene... where Eric Draven goes up to the table of villains and is like, and walks in, that was the Dark Knight. That was like straight out of, that was when Joker appears and walks in and they're all like, oh my God. And he just sits down and doesn't give a fuck. Like, I don't think Timothy Nolan, I'm sure he didn't, but it felt very, very similar. And it was cool to see. Like, that was almost fun to watch because I was like, oh, that definitely influenced it somehow. Mm-hmm. But the villain and I put a note down that the villains look straight out of Highlander. Like, they did all have that, like, just that really generic, like, we're just bad guys to be bad guys. Special effects, terrible. I'm pretty sure they were bad even for the 90s. Mm-hmm. And every time they showed the cityscape, it had that Sin City feel where it was like, is this supposed to be drawn? Like, was this supposed to be animated? Yeah. And we're supposed to be like in the joke. And the final battle was horrifically bad. And he's about to kill him, and he just grabs his head and makes him see. And it's a cool idea, but it's just executed really badly and was so anticlimactic. And then he just falls off and dies, and he goes back. And I know, and I read some of the backstory, and I know a lot of the movie was plagued by, obviously, his tragic death. And there was supposed to be a lot more. There was apparently a character who was supposed to be his, like, guide, his, like, spirit guide that got taken out. So the movie... It's hard to criticize the movie on its plot because they had a lot of work to do, but man, the movie was a real letdown for me, and I was really disappointed because I was like, oh, this is what, because I feel like however many movies I've done in the past, you know, the last seven movies, I've been, each time I'm like, this one is going to be okay. And I've just torn them all apart. And this one, But all of that bad said, I still think there's a special place for this movie because I think it did was the foundation for a lot of other things that came after it that were good. And he's got cool makeup, I guess. I don't know. We've all, you know, everybody knows somebody who went as the Crow for Halloween. I don't know.
Scott Garvey for me. Whenever, we went out. And
I love that you
Crow.
Know with the name.
Well, that's that was my buddy in high school. Yeah.
So Scott Garvey, if you're listening, yeah. I get it. But yeah. Honestly, if you're listening to this and you're like, oh, I should go back and watch this. Don't go watch The Wraith. And it's a
Do
much better
watch either. Don't watch neither of these movies.
Shut up. Shut your mouth, Django. The Wraith is a fantastic, but The Wraith is a fantastic bad movie. It's bad, but it's a great bad movie. This is a bad.
This is a slog for sure.
This is a bad good movie that
I'm
trying
to hate it more and more. The more you make these excellent points.
Oh, and my last point was the whole thing at the end. They're like, oh, if we kill the Crow, he loses his power. Okay. But they didn't kill the Crow. No. The Crow's still bouncing around and he's getting hurt. Why didn't he shouldn't have lost his power? So when you set up, there's an author called Brandon Sanderson. He's a huge fantasy author and he makes a great point he had a TED talk, I think. As a writer, when you're setting up a fantasy world and you're creating magic or superpowers or something, there has to be rules and you have to follow those rules. And if you don't, it's the reader or watcher is going to suffer because there's just going to feel like there's no cost. And this was that. And so it just was like, well, what was the point of the Crow Raven, whatever then? So I don't know. It disappointed me. I still love the 90s. I still think the makeup's cool. 4.5.
Ooh,
man, I love it. Go
these off, these notes brought to you by guttingthesacredcow.com, where you can find some sweet merch, hats, mugs, bags. Leave us a 5-star rating. Tell your friends a compliment is the best. Sorry, a referral is the best compliment we could ever ask for. And jump in on the fun. I love when Lord Snurts gives predictions. You guys should jump out there and predict what your scores are too when we announce what film we're watching and taping that night. I love when Bango does his recaps. He did 5 this week.
Bango is Bango.
What the
Bango
hell?
2331. He's a cop in PA who does a recap and it's funny as shit. Guys, get on the fun. You guys are fans of this. Jump, find your own little niche. Jump in, have fun, or even piggyback off those other two great segments. We love them. I retweet the shit out of that stuff. We eat it alive. Notes. Holy shit. I forgot Winston Zeddemore is in this. What a welcome surprise. As a film nerd, did anybody else notice in the very beginning the frame freezes for no reason when Sarah and Winston Zeddemore, that's right, I don't remember his character name, hug, freezes, and then it goes to a wipe. That was a filmmaking error and not a choice, kids. I was.
Oh, man.
Writing that down.
$25 million budget, and they still have that shit happening.
Didn't. If that was a choice, that was a weak-ass choice.
Yeah.
Boys, I could not tell you. A lot of this film takes place at a hot dog stand. I could not tell you the last time I paid for a hot dog at a store. And I promise you it won't be anytime soon. Yes, Django, I know you live like Cliff's Dogs in the Lower East Side. That's pretty good. Of course, Ruts, Hutt, and Clifton. I do not eat ballpark dogs. It's either grilled hot dogs or you can fuck right off. Boiled hot dogs, dirty water dogs, those monstrosities.
You're so wrong.
That you heathens eat at a ball game and you pay $9 for. I'll just shit in your mouth for $4.50 and save you half. It's disgusting. Here's some mustard. That'll dummy up the taste. Boiled hot dogs are disgusting. Hot dogs that are not grilled or sold in public are disgusting. I will allow fried, which is, well, not the best for you, but at least it's tasteful. Boiled, yuck.
I just bought hot dogs this weekend at a food truck and they were delicious.
Well, then they must have not boiled them. They must have grilled them or fried them.
I don't know.
You do know.
They were delicious.
Because if it was boiled, it'd be tasting like you're eating like a toy chicken, a rubber toy chicken.
He did put ketchup on the hot dog, which is disgusting.
I disagree. I love ketchup on hot dogs. Disgusting. I do not care. It's delicious. I don't care what you have to say. For someone who's been dead for a year, Brandon Lee has fantastic muscle mass and no body decomposition. Did you catch that?
Yes.
It's like he just rolled out of bed, not rolled out of bed from a year of being dead. Just Ryan, that's a Cat in Hat poem in the making. So let's really get into some that doesn't happens. Brandon Lee heads back to his old apartment, who doesn't have new tenants in it. It's been a year, guys. That landlord is losing money. Oh, who else is there? The cat. The cat is the most unloyal animal there is. If you're asleep for more than 10 hours, they'll eat your face off.
Yeah.
Yet this cat is still there with no one to feed it. Bullshit. It'd be feral. It'd be in the alleyway. It'd be chopped up in some poor kitchen somewhere being served as food. But no, the cat happens to hang out the apartment, which should have been rented a long time ago. And yes, the window is still broken. Good luck. Maybe that's why it hasn't been rented still.
You know what? You make it. It's a great point. And I know you're joking in a ways, but at the same time, it really did ruin the storytelling, because I was watching that. I watched that scene and I was like, what the fuck's going on? The cat's still there and it's clean, like it's white, perfectly, yep. like just groomed white.
Persian like, cat. Kevin Israel, you son of a bitch. You missed one on the 90s smorgasbord. You said the waitress from Bad Boys. You said Sully from Commando. You forgot Tintin from Hackers as Lord Nikon.
Oh, shit. You're right. You're right. Wow.
I've been intoxicated many, many, many times. I made a lot of bad choices, like driving drunk, like having sex with a woman below an 8, like locking pledges into a porta potty and knocking them over. Hell, I've even shot Roman candles at friends. But my dumb dildo friends and I never, ever thought of literally dying from lead poisoning by swallowing bullets. Oh, you know what else we never thought about doing? Putting out cigars on our tongue to prove how badass we were. That ranks up there with rewatching Rocky Horror Picture Show while Lizzo gives me a lap dance after eating enchiladas slathered in green sauce and the level of terrible ideas. You know, I thought that was going to get more than it did, so I'll just
it was a haunting visual.
Well, that was the idea. It just didn't come home and pay off. Looks like Brandon Lee gained two superpowers, immortality and the ability to do parkour on rooftops.
I actually said that to Ashley while we were watching that.
The parkour pun?
I was like, why is he doing, like he grabbed that thing and swung and like jumped. And I was like, was that supposed, he's an undead superhero and the best thing he can do is swing on a pole.
Right.
Yeah.
In the age of every movie that was turned into a video game, how come this one was not?
That's a great question, because they were making video games out of fucking like Home Improvement back then.
Home Alone was a video game.
Yeah.
Demolition Man was a video game. Last Action Hero was a video game. But this wasn't. I don't buy that.
They could have just rebranded Double Dragon and take one of the guys
I was going to say Final Fight. Final Fight.
Yeah, they really should have just like taking the skins off of like,
at the risk of selling. At the risk of sounding obvious yet again, this is the most 90s soundtrack of all time and arguably top three of all time. And the score is also a banger, too. You guys did not hit on that. The score set the mood beautifully. If you like the film or not, the score, it's knocking off-ish Danny Elfman from Batman, but it's a fantastic substitute.
But did you notice, Kev? There was the scene where he's in the apartment with Winston, and they're having that conversation, and there's like this music playing in the background, and it suddenly felt like it was an episode of like Family Matters. Like there was just the music was so weird. It took the whole movie out of context, and it felt like it was just like two buddies having a conversation with this weird music playing in the background.
And this episode of Family Matters, Eddie gets pulled over by the cops for racial profiling
on a very special episode of The Crow.
If a movie in the 90s didn't have brief nudity, it had to have been rated G or PG, because every movie in the 90s had a bare boobage at the bare minimum in a 90s film. And I yearn for the days of yore.
Did this happen?
Yeah. When they turn over the dead hook. The dead hooker, you saw her tits.
You're right.
This is R-rated. Did you know, and don't lie to me, the gravelly voice main bad guy, his name is Top Dollar. They never say his name in the film. Never.
They do. At the beginning when like his like lead henchman's like, you can't come in there. Top Dollar is like busy or something like that. He does call him Top Dollar. That it probably isn't said often, but I definitely remember hearing it.
They smell it. They said it once then, because I've seen this movie, I don't know how many times. And I go, I don't know his name. I don't know his name.
Yeah.
What a stupid He's the name. Too.
The bad guy.
Yeah. The guy who talks like this, like he drank Drano and gin and smoked a pack of Marlboro Reds.
He's like a Robert Loggia.
Why does searing eyeballs, quote, smell yummy? Is that how Armie Hammer got his inspiration? I like how Can't Rain All the Time tried so hard to be this film's Hasta La Vista, Baby.
Yeah, that's like a half-assed motivational quote.
The ADR was very, sorry, the sound effects were very distracting in this. In my case in point, the main offender. This is 1994, filmed in 1993, we'll assume. But you hear typewriters clacking in the background like it's 1958, like they're at the Daily Planet. I've never heard a typewriter so loudly in a time where computers were quite normal when people use that to record crime or reports or type stuff up. Too many typewriters. Besides banging random women and not wearing a condom in the bathroom at Bar A, how else would you enjoy invincibility? That's my question to you guys.
Oh, it's a question. Invincibility. Well, Jesus, I mean, you got to assume fucking bank robbery would be high on the list, right?
Sure. Unprotected sex would be my choice, but, you know, that's just me.
Sounds like it, yeah.
You did that anyway. You didn't need to tie.
I always wear rubbers with dirty broads in the bars. Always. Always packed them. You know, you put it in your wallet and it has that big circle imprint in the back.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Because you never know. And when you did know.
If you keep it in there for too long, it's like the saddest, most wrinkled.
Yeah,
it looks like artifact.
It looks like a smolted snake skin from 1973.
Yeah.
Another observation. So, besides invincibility, never mind. I wrote that down. Cross it out. Next observation: Darla has some big ass titties.
What's an observation? Which one's Darla? Is that
the mom?
Oh, that's right. Oh, that's right. The mom. Yeah.
By the way, another way Eric Draven uses power. He also has more powers. Did you know this, guys? Eric Draven has three sets of powers. This one, he became a just say no counselor for a junkie.
Yeah, that was pretty lame, like moralizing bullshit.
Right.
No thanks. That was another issue I had in the movie. The whole like the city has gone to shit. People don't even care about each other. We just have to not lock our doors. It feels like very much like a Ronald Reagan, like Promise for America style, like. Like it just, I don't like the empty moralizing. No, thank you.
And his line when he pulls the drugs out of her, which I thought was a cool effect, but he goes, "Morphine is bad for you." Like what? No shit.
That's wrong.
That's a step above Beavis and Butter going, "Morphine sucks."
Yeah.
By the way, it's also hilarious. He created his own version of Scared Straight by Darla's now dead boyfriend, Fun Boy. When he put a bullet through Eric's hand, and then whoops, guess what? He magically turns that crack whore into Susie Homemaker. Is that character development or what, Kevin Israel? Are you not entertained?
Yeah, I really felt the movie got depth with that one.
Yeah. Another special power Eric Draven has, as you had alluded to at the very end, was putting his hands on a face, on someone's face to live through painful memories. That's right out of Professor X's handbook, guys. Yeah. I'm sure as a comic book nerd that you are, Kevin, I thought you were going to beat me to the punch. I would love to torture somebody by putting my hands on their face and having the memory of me bombing my dick off at some restaurant in Jersey on Route 130, where two of my best friends from home come see me and they watch me eat shit for 15 minutes. That's what I want everyone to live through.
Just kill me. It's too much.
And the worst part was everyone had in front of me bombed to go, these, and they sucked. I'm like, they suck. I'm going to mop the floor up here. Nope.
Yeah.
Pride comes before the fall.
Yeah, well, listen, sometimes you're the hammer and sometimes you're the nail. Guys, the henchmen in here were memorable as all hell. I remember all their names. I could tell you all about them. I disagree. They're all Final Fight characters in the cartoon video game, but I think they're all memorable and I enjoyed them. And I like how Skank even said, damn foreign cars. Like, we're still in the 80s and believing that American cars are actually superior to imports. That was hilarious. I'm like, we're way past that part of car xenophobia. I'll say that. Is this a film that we credit for the hero making a flame outline of his logo? I think it is.
Had that never been done before?
Not to my knowledge.
Right. Yeah.
Well, yep. It did one thing right.
Brandon Lee's Section 8 housing is the worst superhero lair I have ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah. You really should. You're supposed to be watching these movies with like some kind of like envy, like, wow, Bruce Wayne has a
Batcave
shit together. You're not watching some guy like clean broken glass out of the room he was killed in.
Watching junkies boot up in the hallway and stepping over rats and asbestos. That's his lair. You lazy. Yeah. Hey, what was the point for Devil's Night? I'll wait.
And was that just Mischief Night?
This is Halloween.
Yes.
The fuck is doing?
Yeah. What is the point of keep burning down the city? How are they making money to do that?
Because he has no job. He has no job. Right.
And who wants to keep living in this city when it makes Gotham look like Greenwich, Connecticut? Mm-hmm. There's no, the whole Devil's Night thing is just a MacGuffin of nothing. I was like, oh, Devil's Night. Yeah. Is that where they go loot? Is that where they just go steal from corporate? No, nothing. Just set the whole fucking city on fire. For what? What is the point? For the sanitation workers to have shit to do for the next week and a half?
Because bad guys.
Yeah.
The
city needs a municipal reorganization. It kind of is like when New York is like now.
Yeah. Ain't that the truth? The scene where Eric Draven comes for Skank and gets shot up, that is great. I love that scene. I can watch that any day. I just want him. Well, you can't have him. Well, you have made your decision. Now let's see you enforce it. That was a badass scene, fellas. I disagree. I think that was top solid shit. You stole this one quote. Let me start over. So many cops, you think they're giving away free donuts. 90s action cliches. God damn it. I love it. I know this is the era for the cop with the asshole supervisor to have that cop always suspended, but this trope needs to be retired for Christ's sakes. No more, hey, you think you're above the law? Well, that's it. You're suspended. And of course, the guy in the third act saves the day. We've seen enough of that. Just like hearing Uptown Girl by Billy Joel. We're done. We can move on now. Thank you. The ending was very, very Batman 1989 because he kidnaps the girl. He takes her to the rooftop of a church. The only thing missing is little girl faking her love for the color purple. That's it. And a set of chattering fake teeth. The Asian woman gets her eyes pecked out by the Crow. Why didn't he send out the Crow to do that with every other bad guy? We all know you can train crows to do some shit like that. Why? That's a fact. In fact, Adam Carolla talks about it. Having crows as like a drone kind of defense, just attack people or whatever with the crows. Training
crows? Is that
true? No. That was his idea, which I thought was comical. Yeah, no, he's not doing that.
He's starting to lose a thread a little bit.
Yeah, no, but
Howard Hughes style.
We wait for her to get her eyes pecked out. Could have done that in the first 15 minutes and send that crow to do that. At least take a dump on somebody. There's no bird shit in this film either. That was very surprising. This film is still enjoyable despite its many, many flaws. The plot is, loose, to say it best. Soundtrack, I've said already. I still like this film. I like it. I am not going to defend it to the hilt. I'm not going to stand on the top of the mountain and go, come at me, bitches. I got this. I got enough smoke for you all day long. No, I get it. I still like it. I can still watch it. A lot of flaws. It is a 6.5 out of 10.
Oh, 6.5?
After all this?
Wow, 6.5. I thought it was going to be 5.5.
No,
I'd give you. I'd allow a 5.5. 6.5 is egregious.
I know, it's still look. It's. I'm not defending it.
Tell me, you text me the next time you watch this movie, and
next
I'll wait.
Time?
I'll wait 20. Whoa, I'll wait. Whoa, whoa, I'll wait 20 whoa, whoa. Or 30 years
again? It won't be that long.
Oh yeah, you missed so many things the first time through, right?
I don't know. Like you said, you could put it in the background and pay no mind and be fine with it. That's
a great background film. This
what I may do. Now let's go to the Lord Snert's score predictions. And I have you guys he gave me a 6.5 out of 10. So right on. Kevin Israel, you had you at a 7.
Whoops. Sorry, Snerts.
Well, he accounted for your love for 90s, I guess. And yeah. Django, he had you at a 4.5 out of 10.
Getting closer. I'm thinking about revising it to something more in that range now that I've heard all your guys' critiques, because you guys are spot on. This movie sucks ass.
Let's hear what the critics who definitely spent more than $100 at a Spencer Gifts or Hot Topic said about this film. Critics, 5-star reviews. Still a shockingly effective movie, one that plays with mythic ideas while also depicting a world gone to hell. Okay.
That's like a Trumpism thing. Yeah. Shocking ideas of crime existing in a city.
I will say that I rewatched this for this project and surprised how well it holds up. It might be it might be perhaps the most early 90s movie ever made, but unlike Reality Bites, it's in a way that's still cool and stylish. Reality Bites, another good soundtrack, but a weak film.
I don't think I ever saw it.
Don't rush. The movie is very interesting. It's very funny. And again, it presents two experiences, the movie and the soundtrack alone. These two experiences are good. And when they are put together, it is even better. What is scary about The Crow is the story and the style itself. American Gothic, Poe-haunted nightmare translated to the age of cyberpunk science fiction, revenge movies, and outlaw rock and roll, all set in a hideously decaying, crime-ridden urban hell.
There's not really science fiction in this movie.
I mean, you're right, not science fiction. You're right, but everything else.
Sunglasses are science fiction now.
Kevin Israel, that's the most criticky review that didn't make me want to throw up.
It wasn't. Yeah.
Critics, 1-star reviews. Simply more of the same gritty superhero nonsense that appeals to depressed 15-year-old boys, and it's not done all that well either. Luridly lit, jumpily edited, and searingly scored, the film is a little more than an extended pop video, the thin plot of an excuse for an orgy of destruction and vengeful violence.
I agree.
He had some good catchphrases in there, cute little quips, little watered-down Arnold-isms as he dispatched the bad guys. This lurid thriller is long on nasty shocks, but short on spontaneity, intelligence, and good acting.
Yeah.
Eric Draven's character had two actors to give him the best they could, and that's all they got out of it.
The Crow also runs a huge villain deficit.
True.
Amazon, 5-star reviews. The package came in perfect condition, so did the Blu-ray. Brandon Lee, rest in peace. There were a lot of Brandon Lee RIPs in here.
Did it really say Brandon Lee rest in peace?
Oh, yes, it did. Yes, it did. A lot of them did. Over a decade ago, I went to high school with a boy who dressed up like Eric Draven on a normal basis. My clothing and lifestyle, goth, were questionable to most from the outside looking in, and despite regrettably not having seen The Crow, when my friend would take bathroom breaks at school just to apply his Eric Draven look, it was years later that I realized why. Because he was probably an aspiring school shooter.
You took it.
I owed you. Only thing that I would change, and this is a very minor gripe, is the final gun battle with the bad guy gangs in the nightclub drags on interminably long, and the bad guys manage to shoot every bottle on the shelves but rarely hit their intended target. Final gun battle is also drawn out, but it is the last one you'll have to sit through. Signed, George Lucas. Best movie ever. I not skank. Skank right there. Skank dead. Skank did die, so he was right. Good job, Skank. That made me chuckle.
Best movie ever.
Amazon, 5-star reviews. I don't know what is worse, the acting, the storyline, the music, or the writing. This movie is horrible. What happened during the filming is tragic, but the movie itself is pure stupidity. Signed, Tim Curry. Absolutely one of the dumbest movies ever made. The plot and script are on the level of a 12-year-old, not a very bright 12-year-old at that. This movie is a dog with fleas, and I am utterly mystified by the positive reviews that tricked me into watching it. The movie is laughably bad. The dialogue, the little of it there is insane and pointless. The characterizations and motivations are flat and shallow, and every single element of the plot is implausible and stupid. The author, director, nor producer have obviously been to Detroit. The depiction of Detroit is hysterical, nearly funny. For example, we're in the middle of urban Detroit for the entire movie, yet there are no black people. That's not true. All the criminals are a bunch of goth white guys with a few Asians thrown in, running all the crime syndicates in Detroit. Yeah, that makes sense. There is a black cop to make up for it. I urge you not to watch this movie. I watched it all the way through so I could earn the right to write a review. This is a very, very stupid movie. Signed, Jason Aldean.
Yeah. Yeah, this is exactly what he was warning about in that song of his.
This was the small town that was...
Yeah, run rampant.
And who said this was Detroit? Did we catch that? No.
Yeah, where the fuck did that come from?
Nowhere. That's made up.
All the Joe Louis fist.
I thought that, yeah, exactly. Does he a big Lou? Did someone wear a Lou Whitaker or Alan Trammell jersey in the background?
Detroit wishes like it was that nice.
There's a Pistons game on a TV in the background. While they're
there's the Bill Ambeer, and Bill Ambeer dishes off to Isaiah, who hits it for three.
Yeah.
This does not exist. Did the kid from The Matrix, who also said there is no spoon, write that review?
That was the whole review? This does not exist. Yeah.
Last one, horrible dialogue, really cheesy. Plot is almost non-existent. I honestly wonder how some of these people were able to become directors. I could poop better scripts than this. And this, kids, is how Pitch Perfect came into existence.
Oh, I think Pitch Perfect is a way better movie than this.
I think Pitch Perfect stinks and is not even close to this film. Pitch Perfect is terrible. Wow. We did in this very podcast about a month ago. Kevin Israel, did Django gut the sacred cow?
This is a tough one for me.
I knew you were going to say that.
Because I do agree. I don't think this movie is without value, but it's not a good movie, and he made some good points. But I think the movie's still standing.
Give it a 4.5.
Yeah, no, I don't like it. But I mean, look, I've given movies zero, so. Mm-hmm. So a 4.5 is a decent score for what I considered a bad movie. I'm gonna say I don't think so, but I'll defer to Kevin Goatee's judgment.
I say no, and here is why. I did not change my score, and you added a 4.5. You only gave it a 4.5 because you thought the film itself hung it on its own merits, not because of his argument. Your needle did not move, nor did mine. That's why I give it a no.
I see. Wow. Guys, I've let you down.
No, you let society. You let society and Brandon Lee's estate down.
Brandon,
put on your makeup and go avenge yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, this might be a one shot deal here, but this could be the only time you call this podcast "Gutting the Sacred Crow."
Oh,
this will be the only time in the history of the podcast you guys can do that.
Son of a bitch!
Get the STST guys on the fucking phone.
Yeah, you guys need a new logo stat.
What if we did Reservoir Dogs? It'd be Gutting the Sacred Dog.
Oh, but crow and cow sound alike.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm with you. No, I'm with you. That's much, much better.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can actually have a chuckle for once with ChatGPT. Who's funnier, ChatGPT or KG? ChatGPT has written 10 jokes. I'm not going to make you suffer through 10. We're going to do 3. My God. Why did Eric Draven become a musician after he returned from the dead? He wanted to sing his enemies a haunting melody, the Crow Kestrel Symphony.
I guess that's technically a joke. Oh, no.
It's not just a sentence.
No.
Yeah. It was a fancy sentence.
Why was Eric Draven so good at playing hide and seek? Because he had a knack for blending into the shadows, just like in The Crow.
Is this supposed to be making sound?
Yeah, that's my slide whistle. Why did Eric Draven start his own advice column? He wanted everyone to hear his wise words as he was a truly counsel. Sorry, God damn it. He was truly a crowsel for troubled souls.
Jesus, they're getting worse. It's getting worse. I thought AI was supposed to get smart, like better. Like, yeah. I thought it's supposed to learn, and well, it's getting worse.
It's training itself on its own garbage. It makes.
Yeah. Garbage in, garbage out.
Well, yeah. Listen, I thought it would get better because, hell, in Terminator 3, I was terrible. At least it said, Judgment Day is inevitable. Prove me wrong. Boom, there go the missiles. Here, Quite the opposite. They just turned the missiles back on themselves and blew itself to kingdom come. Kevin Goatee, Django Gold, thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next time. Later.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.